Welcome to Life in Debt, your practical debt education program. This is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak. I'm speaking from Crew LP, 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, an award-winning, listener-supported, open-source grassroots community radio station broadcasting from the Cultural District in Fairfield. Please note that these presentations are provided as a public service for general information purposes only and are not intended to be legal opinions, legal advice, or complete discussions of any legal issues. Remember, every individual's factual situation is different, and you should seek independent legal advice from an attorney familiar with the laws of your state or locality regarding specific information. The name of this show is Life in Debt, and it is a weekly half-hour educational show looking at all types of issues related to debt as it influences your life. This show provides practical, general knowledge about what to look for regarding debt, what are its traps and pitfalls, and what to do to be an educated debtor. Please get some notebook, paper, and pen to take notes during the show. First, as is always, I look at some debt-related news and facts for the week, and this week I would like to present to you a short vignette by former students of mine, John Jarvis and Brandon Au, called The Credit Crisis. It's actually a visualized presentation, but the audio track is so educational, I want to share it with you. So here it is, called The Crisis of Credit Visualized.
The Crisis of Credit Visualized. What is the credit crisis? It's a worldwide financial fiasco involving terms you've probably heard, like subprime mortgages, collateralized debt obligations, frozen credit markets, and credit default swaps. Who's affected? Everyone. How did it happen? Here's how. The credit crisis brings two groups of people together, homeowners and investors. Homeowners represent their mortgages, and investors represent their money. These mortgages represent houses, and this money represents large institutions like pension funds, insurance companies, sovereign funds, mutual funds, etc. These groups are brought together through the financial system, a bunch of banks and brokers commonly known as Wall Street. While it may not seem like it, these banks on Wall Street are closely connected to these houses on Main Street. To understand how, let's start at the beginning. Years ago, the investors are sitting on their pile of money, looking for a good investment to turn into more money. Traditionally, they go to the U.S. Federal Reserve, where they buy treasury bills, believed to be the safest investment. But in the wake of the dot-com bust in September 11th, Federal Reserve Chairman Alan Greenspan lowers interest rates to only 1% to keep the economy strong. 1% is a very low return on investment, so the investors say, no thanks. On the flip side, this means banks on Wall Street can borrow from the Fed for only 1%. Add to that general surpluses from Japan, China, and the Middle East, and there's an abundance of cheap credit. This makes borrowing money easy for banks and causes them to go crazy with leverage. Leverage is borrowing money to amplify the outcome of a deal. Here's how it works. In a normal deal, someone with $10,000 buys a box for $10,000. He then sells it to someone else for $11,000. For a $1,000 profit, a good deal. But using leverage, someone with $10,000 would go borrow $990,000 more dollars, giving him $1 million in hand. Then he goes and buys 100 boxes with his $1 million and sells them to someone else for $1,100,000. Then he pays back his $990,000 plus $10,000 in interest. And after his initial $10,000, he's left with a $90,000 profit versus the other guy's $1,000. Leverage turns good deals into great deals. This is a major way banks make their money. So Wall Street takes out a ton of credit. makes great deals, and grows tremendously rich, and then pays it back. The investors see this and want a piece of the action, and this gives Wall Street an idea. They can connect the investors to the homeowners through mortgages. Here's how it works. A family wants a house, so they save for a down payment and contact a mortgage broker. The mortgage broker connects the family to a lender who gives them a mortgage. The broker makes a nice commission. The family buys a house and becomes homeowners. This is great for them because housing prices have been rising practically forever. Everything works out nicely. One day, the lender gets a call from an investment banker who wants to buy the mortgage. The lender sells it to him for a very nice fee. The investment banker then borrows millions of dollars and buys thousands more mortgages and puts them into a nice little box. This means that every month he gets the payments from the homeowners of all the mortgages in the box. Then he sicks his banker wizards on it to work their financial magic, which is basically cutting it into three slices. Safe, okay, and risky. They pack the slices back up in the box and call it a collateralized debt obligation, or CDO. A CDO works like three cascading trays. As money comes in, the top tray fills first, then spills over into the middle, and whatever is left into the bottom. The money comes from homeowners paying off their mortgages. If some owners don't pay and default on their mortgage, less money comes in and the bottom tray may not get filled. This makes the bottom tray riskier and the top tray safer. To compensate for the higher risk, the bottom tray receives a higher rate of return, while the top receives a lower but still nice return. To make the top even safer, banks will insure it for a small fee called a credit default swap. The banks do all of this work so that credit rating agencies will stamp the top slice as a safe AAA rated investment, the highest, safest rating there is. The okay slice is BBB, still pretty good, and they don't bother to rate the risky slice. Because of the AAA rating, the investment banker can sell the safe slice to the investors who only want safe investments. He sells the okay slice to other bankers and the risky slices to hedge funds and other risk takers. The investment banker makes millions. He then repays his loans. Finally, the investors have found a good investment for their money, much better than the 1% treasury bills. They're so pleased they want more CDO slices. So the investment banker calls up the lender, wanting more mortgages. The lender calls up the broker for more homeowners, but the broker can't find anyone. Everyone that qualifies for a mortgage already has one, but they have an idea. When homeowners default on their mortgage, the lender gets the house. And houses are always increasing in value. Since they're covered if the homeowners default, lenders can start adding risk to new mortgages, not requiring down payments, no proof of income, no documents at all. And that's exactly what they did. So instead of lending to responsible homeowners, called prime mortgages, they started to get some that were, well, less responsible. These are subprime mortgages. This is the turning point. So, just like always, the mortgage broker connects the family with a lender and a mortgage, making his commission. The family buys a big house. The lender sells the mortgage to the investment banker, who turns it into a CDO and sells slices to the investors and others. This actually works out nicely for everyone and makes them all rich. No one was worried because as soon as they sold the mortgage to the next guy, it was his problem. If the homeowners were to default, they didn't care. They were selling off their risk to the next guy and making millions, like playing hot potato with a time bomb. Not surprisingly, the homeowners default on their mortgage. which at this moment is owned by the banker. This means he forecloses and one of his monthly payments turns into a house. No big deal. He puts it up for sale. But more and more of his monthly payments turn into houses. Now there are so many houses for sale on the market, creating more supply than there is demand, and housing prices aren't rising anymore. In fact, they plummet. This creates an interesting problem for homeowners still paying their mortgages. As all the houses in their neighborhood go up for sale, the value of their house goes down, and they start to wonder why they're paying back their $300,000 mortgage when the house is now worth only $90,000. They decide that it doesn't make sense to continue paying, even though they can afford to, and they walk away from their house. Default rates sweep the country, and prices plummet. Now the investment banker is basically holding a box full of worthless houses. He calls up his buddy, the investor, to sell his CDO, but the investor isn't stupid, and says, no thanks. He knows that the stream of money isn't even a dribble anymore. The banker tries to sell to everyone, but nobody wants to buy his bomb. He's freaking out because he borrowed millions, sometimes billions of dollars to buy this bomb, and he can't pay it back. Whatever he tries, he can't get rid of it. But he's not the only one. The investors have already bought thousands of these bombs. The lender calls up trying to sell his mortgage, but the banker won't buy it, and the broker is out of work. The whole financial system is frozen, and things get dark. Everybody starts going bankrupt. But that's not all. The investor calls up the homeowner and tells him that his investments are worthless. And you can begin to see how the crisis flows in a cycle. Welcome to the crisis of credit.
If you are just tuning in, this is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and this program is Life and Debt, your practical debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP, 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. And what you had just been listening to was the crisis of credit. You can actually see it at crisisofcredit.com. It's by Jonathan Jarvis and Brandon Au. Very, very interesting piece. Now I'd like to move on to the second part of my show, where we're actually looking not so much at problems, but at solutions. And I always start out with an important credit, because the thoughts, ideas, and examples used in these programs are directly from or based on the work, theories, and books of Professor Elizabeth Warren from Harvard and her daughter Amelia Warren Tyagi, two of America's leading champions for debtors. And I highly recommend their books, All Your Worth, which is really a textbook for a part of this course, and The Two Income Trap. You can also review all of the prior shows at www.kruufm.com. In the archives, look under Life and Debt, and this will be very useful in building your knowledge base for all of the points that we need to really master to have a easy way to deal with our debt situation, and also with making sure that in the future we avoid debt and we have some stable financial means as we move through life and into retirement. And I'd like to review what I discussed last week. I had been discussing under the concept of love and money, having relationships, long-term relationships, particularly permanent relationships, marriages, and partnerships, where money doesn't become a hugely problematic issue. There were 8 golden rules that Professor Warren had enunciated, and we were on number 8, which is the art of compromise. And last week we discussed that, and you are doing what she calls honest to goodness, healthy money relationship issues as time goes on, and you're dealing with it. and you can have a fantastic relationship, yet you still have times when you disagree, and that may not just be on little things, but on big things. And those are things that you just can't cover with your wants category, which we called your fun money. For example, one of you wants a bigger, different house, one of you wants a different kind of a car, a better car, a faster car. These are extraordinarily big decisions. Your child wants to go to a certain college, and you have the desire to help with that, and the other person may not feel that that's appropriate. So no amount of good intentions can make these kinds of decisions go away in your relationship. So what do you do? What we discussed was compromise, the art of compromise, actually. And there are a few basic components to that art. And the first thing we discussed was just to keep talking. As a person who's in a long-term relationship myself with a therapist who knows all about communication, this is really a critical point that she always brings up. You start talking, you keep on bringing up the points. You always share what you're thinking in a very safe way, not doing, as we talked about in the past, bringing up blaming points or things you can't cure from the past like that. When you're talking about these kinds of big decisions, there is and can be a lot to talk about, and so you need to keep the conversation going over a long period of time. And in that process, one of the things we have now is the internet, and it's amazing how much information you can gather very quickly about your items of discussion to use in the discussion. For example, Consumer Reports is something that can be gotten on the internet. You can get a lot of similar kinds of reports. Those are very important factual bases for dealing with your economic position. You can also ask your friends about their purchases. Just for example, if you were buying a house, there's so much information and data out there. You want to sort through that, but you should also go to your friends and get some information about their purchases that are similar to yours. And also you should use experts, professionals that you know and trust and have good reputations, not somebody you're going to just pick up because they're a good talker and they can charm you into something. It's really important to have a solid foundation of information to keep bringing back to the table to have your conversation, and in fact it also opens up other avenues in that conversation. And once you get it open, you keep talking, and that progresses until you both feel 100% happy about that final decision, and also you both are 100% responsible for that final decision. That's a very important thing. There's no blame here. You can't just put it off on the other person. You both say, yes, this is what we're going to do. And so that's part of the art of compromise. Another thing that you need to do is to put time on your side. That really means that sometimes when we make these decisions, it is just a matter of timing. For example, you may want to take a vacation this year and remodel the kitchen next year, yet your spouse feels, well, I know we really need to remodel the kitchen and we can put the vacation off. Or, for example, too, the kids may need more room in the house right now, and that nicer car is something that we can look at down the road. But you can also layer these things and make it into a package kind of a deal. And when you layer things, you can get what you want over time. Instead of saying it is a vacation or an improvement on the house, a new sofa for example, decide that you will save for both and you get something and your partner gets something. Now, of course, this means it takes longer, but in that process, you recognize that you both have legitimate wants, and these are big wants, and you can work together for them. And then that actually is a very healthy, healing relationship issue. And principal, the realization is basically priceless. You're getting a tremendous benefit by having these conduits of conversation, and it's an extraordinarily useful thing to create a stronger relationship and also to help you financially. And then the third thing is to really get a perspective, to focus on a big picture. If you're getting in squabbles, that's not unusual or atypical in relationships when money is injected into the situation. So you have to step back and keep your eye on the bigger picture. Even if you can't agree on everything, there are some very, very big things that you can agree on. You both want to keep a roof over your heads, for example. You both want to grow old in comfort and dignity. Even if you don't agree on how much money to put in your retirement account, or the house that you want to live in, the size of it, the neighborhood you want to live in, those are obviously important issues, but you get back to basics. You want to have safety for your children. You want, of course, to also stop fighting and to stop worrying about money. So what you do is you put your disagreements into perspective. When a relationship has become bruised over the subject of money, reminding yourself of the common ground can really be a healing salve in the whole process. So that's very important. And that's the eighth principle, the art of compromise in finances and financial issues in a relationship. If you are just tuning in, this is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and I am speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. So in essence, what we have been looking at is the concept of love and money, long-term relationships, having it all. And you want to love each other, you want to be committed to each other, and you also want to deal with your financial issues. Sometimes it's not easy to do that when a lot is going on in your personal financial life, and as we've been seeing for a long time now, in the economy, both locally, nationally, and of course globally. And we go to financial experts. We're always trying to get some hints and help in dealing with all of these things. And we are often trying to change our partner to get on track with these kinds of issues. And yet, there are disagreements that come up, and those disagreements tend to be something that is reasonable at times. And yet, we have to make it balanced with the love that we have for each other. So we came up with some rules on love and money. We said, change what you can. That was a very important rule. Right now, I just want to review some of these things in closing this chapter on love and money. So change what you can. No nagging is another thing that we're really looking at when it comes to the money situation. When we're having a conversation about it, you cannot nag someone into meaningful change. That's an important point. When we're discussing something about money, we stick to the subject, and it's a very subtle kind of thing. When you're bringing up money issues, you don't try to clobber the other person with accusations and making it a stressful kind of conversation. So we try to stay away from battles, and we finesse our way through the issues with each other. And it's a time for positive, constructive kinds of communication. And you help each other. And if the other person who is not listening to the show is not really that interested, you have a little bit bigger challenge, and yet it's still your job and role. And ultimately, it will be the success story, both in terms of money and in terms of your relationship, if you can stick with the principles of being positive, being someone who's looking forward and not just dragging everything that was nasty from the past into the conversation, and whether that was about the money itself or some ancillary kind of thing. It's not appropriate to bring those things up. Another thing that we did in the love and money category, having it all, love and money that is to look at the 8 golden rules of money and relationships. And so I will review those now. The rule number 1 is what's mine is ours as a relationship that is going on perpetually with the goal of it being a long-term relationship. Then everything on every level really becomes both of yours. And that's the truth, that if you're talking about money particularly, it's all of ours and it's not separated in any way, like my money, your money. That's a very important concept. So that's rule number 1 in relationships, dealing with money in particular. Rule number 2 is that you need to be truthful, and as a result, you're making it easy for your partner to be truthful also. A good relationship is based on trust, and you can easily hide things in a relationship, particularly with money, credit card bills, overstating how much you've been saving, or even hiding people's pay stubs. That's something that people often do, and yet that's not truthfulness. You really got to put it out on the table, and don't lie about anything when it comes to these issues, because those lies are evasive, it's a cover-up, and they build into bigger problems of mistrust and evasions over money. And these are cycles that get created and can be very, very difficult to break, and it creates suspicion, etc. So you want to stay away from that. The third rule is to stop playing the blame game. And essentially, both of you are in this relationship, both of you are responsible for money, and so there really isn't any opportunity to blame the other person if you're looking at a healthy financial and relationship outcome. Essentially, you have to let things from the past that didn't work out go, and let the past be past, and build for the future. And it's not as if you're just being godlike and have divine forgiveness. On the other side, it really means that this is all for your benefit. If you are thinking about it, in fact, you're really being selfish in a very positive way, because by forgiving your mate, you can really progress personally. As an eye for an eye style spending will leave you both blind and broke. What you want to do is actually not blame and stay out of the poorhouse as a result of that. You take 100% responsibility for your relationship and for your actions. You can't change what happened yesterday. You learn and you move on. No matter who earns the money, no matter who spends it, you're both 100% responsible. So it's time to let go of the blame game and time to let go of the past. And then one last point for the week in our review here. Rule number 4, golden rule number 4, give each other some free money. And this goes back to our wants category, that we've separated that out as 30% of your net monthly income. You've come up through this course with some apportionment of the wants money. It could be 50-50, it could be more or less, but it's something you already agreed on. And then that money is there to be used by the person. Free money is premised on honesty. You agreed on what you really can afford for fun, and you agreed on how to divide it up. So once you have agreed on some free money, you just really make it truly free. There's no kinds of finger pointing or guilt issues that get associated with that. And we'll continue that review next week, the review of the Golden Rules. This is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and you have been listening to Life in Debt, your debt education program. If you have any questions or comments, call the station at 641-209-1083, or you can email me at lifeanddebt@gmail.com. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM. Fairfield, Iowa,